This is a Cyber Union Podcast, episode 93. Tech workers can organize? Hey, everybody. We're coming back. It's been a long time. Joined here with Matt from Chicago. How you doing, Matt?
Hello. I'm doing well. How about you, Stephen?
Good. I still miss the South African voice of Walton, but it's been impossible to try to get him back on. But hopefully at some point in the future, we'll hear from him again. But what have you been up to since, I guess, March is the last time we recorded? So it's been a while.
It's been a while. A hell of a decade this year has been, Stephen.
Seriously.
Only 8 months. Wow. Not a lot in activism. Nothing new exactly. Just trying to survive in this world. Keep my head down. But personal life. I bought a house recently. So Whoa. Now that project's over, I have plenty of time to get back in the streets.
Nice. When you said head down, I immediately thought of Arrested Development, which is head down, power through.
Yes, absolutely. One of
my favorite lines from that show. And that show is actually, were you a fan of that show too?
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Because like I was, somebody had commented about it. Maybe it was on one of the late night shows about how that show is so Trump. Like real estate mogul and like the name of the family being such an important part. And now that like Trump is this worst president that we've ever had that in our life experiences,
yes.
I'm tempted to go back and watch it again, but I feel like that might sour the experience of the show.
I think you'll enjoy it. I hadn't thought about it in that lens, but I'll definitely take another run at it and see.
I do miss that show. There are so many freaking awesome lines. Tobias was still one of my favorite characters, and Gob Bluth. And I could go through so many quoted lines from it because like I've watched it so many times. Like, did you stab yourself? Yeah, I think so. My socks are wet.
Well, I think it's about time you put the final countdown into every podcast.
The final countdown nights, yeah. What I will actually add to every podcast, and I will put a link in the show notes, is that we are trying to, if you will, bring in some funding for the show. We have now a patreon.com/cyberunions link. And if you are so inclined, we'd like to start trying to give us the resources to bring the show out there a little bit more often and help us maybe buy some new updated materials for microphones and such. I still have my old one, but I'm missing parts apparently. So we'll see if that goes. So I again, we'll put the link in the show notes, but we do hope that people will be able to send some support our way. I guess the other thing I want to kind of talk about is I've been working with this as a dual member of Solidarity and DSA. I've been working with their tech or labor organizing working group, which is really exploring the idea of like tech workers trying to organize. And one of the things that kind of comes up a lot is how do you organize? So I'm going to throw that to you there, Matt. How do you organize? isn't it really easy? Like it should just be simple, right?
Yeah, you just put it on your Facebook event page, hit go, and now you've got an organization.
Ah, that's it. Huh. Man, and that, to think that's all people have needed to do is just create Facebook events and we're done organizing.
You know, interestingly enough, it's you know, we joke about like it's not such a simple thing, but I guess I would say it is actually like the concept is pretty simple. The work is long, but mm-hmm. The basic idea how do you organize is you build genuine and real relationships with people, and that's and you're honest with them and you hold them and yourselves accountable, and you know, you push people when they need to be pushed and you let them push you. I think that's the crux of organizing. And it's a simple concept, but it takes a lot of work and a lot of practice and a lot of patience.
Yeah, that is certainly true. I can't unemphasize, or I'm not even sure what word I'm looking for, but I cannot emphasize enough, there we go, the importance of patience. And I think that's important on not just like low-level organizing, but like all of our expectations. I mean, there's a large group of new socialists, if you will, joining DSA and other leftist socialist organizations that I feel like a lot of folks have this anticipation that the revolution is going to happen tomorrow. And a lot of us would like that. And a lot of us have thought that and then realized, no, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be sometime after tomorrow. And
right,
it's
well,
way down the road.
Yeah, for sure. And you've got to crawl before you walk. Let's everyone, all the radicals out there, let's all remember how, you know, we all started from somewhere. And yeah, we started at some point. None of us, most of us probably were not born with as critical of an eye for what the world could be. And we've had to, you know, reject this capitalist system and deal with what that rejection has done to our relationships. And so patience with everyone, meet people where they are, and, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah. I could not agree with you more. That's a good way of looking at it. And I think the key thing, though, I think with organizing, and whether you're actually trying to organize a union or if you're trying to get people more involved in some radical efforts, there's always, boy, are there ever so many different opportunities in the last 8 months since we've been last recorded of striking or sparks that are lit and trying to figure out how to carry it forward. And we're seeing that with the sexual assaults to the need for universal health care instead of just Obamacare, because like it's just not enough. There have just been so many opportunities. And really what I think is important is, and I will encourage people to actually join organized groups, whether you're in a union or not, outside of the workplace, because it's important to just be able to do something more than just going to a protest or a strike or to a march, because those are good, but they're going to get exhausting if we spend all our time doing it. And it amounts to not really actually changing much. It might expose new people to things, but it doesn't challenge the system enough. It just says, hey, we're resisting, but we need to go beyond that. And joining, whether it's anarchist, socialist, or whatever groups, it's important to do that to be more organized, in my opinion. So NPSA.
100%.
Yeah. On that note, I'm going to self-set up myself on this one, which is one of the things that will be coming up, and we will discuss this, is net neutrality. I think we are likely to see it die. As unfortunate as that may sound, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic about it, but given the FCC and their leadership, it's quite realistic that it is not going to be with us much longer. And that has stirred a lot of questions and ideas locally here, and to really kind of reinvigorate a lot of motivation to what people have called mesh networks and municipal internet service providers. So I think there's a potential that this could turn into some big tech organizing of sorts, and there have been some interesting ideas. Has that been a thought? Like, have you heard anything about that in the Chicago region?
I've heard you talking about it, but it's the first I heard about it. during the years of Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Chicago was a presence, and wireless mesh independent internet is something that was kicked around in the tech cooperative groups that were coming out of Occupy at the time, but nothing material ever advanced itself. I think lack of funding and resources, is certainly cheaper to do it nowadays than it was back then. Not that I haven't been aware of anything on the ground that's going on. Probably the closest thing to this, and this is not an independent effort, but a lot of the local libraries in in the area. So the city of Chicago's library and the suburban libraries have been renting out for free to anybody wireless hotspots.
That's rather interesting.
Which I trust the data in the hand of librarians much more than I do other government officials, but but there seems to be at least a need, a recognized need in this in the city and surrounding areas of access to the internet as a right and something that people need to get along. And so, you know, just getting in on the ground level is something that's been kicked around, but not as necessarily an activist tool.
Yeah, I mean, and that sounds interesting, and I do want to make sure we dedicate a show to this in much more detail, but libraries are a really good starting point because of the tendency that they don't track information. There's also projects, I think, like the Library Freedom Project, that have done a lot of education on surveillance and how to protect yourself outside of a library in that case, as well as in the library. And so that's, I think, a good starting point. I think there are a number of different public venues, if you will, or spaces that we should be exploring as like hotspots that could be like the U.S. Postal Services, because they always have a UPS, U.S. Postal Service building in every single zip code, I believe. And so those could also be another spot, and it would be an interesting thing that I think would be worth exploring. I'm like working with the U.S. Postal Server workers, letter carriers union, and seeing if it's like something that they could try to advocate for internally. But yeah, so I mean, I don't want to, gosh, I hate the fact that we can't use the term Trump anymore. I don't want to trump the conversation, but I cannot think of another word. Ah, fuck you, Trump.
It is what it is.
It is. Sorry, we need to find another word for how we utilize that word Trump. So that's all on you out there. I don't want to look up the thesaurus thing and type in his name. on that note, let's make sure we don't talk about net neutrality overtly and take away from a future show. But it's definitely on the list, and there are a couple of meetings going to be happening here in Boston, trying to figure out tactics that I'd like to bring forward and see where it goes. Hopefully we'll get that going in sooner than an 8-month cycle. I would like to make sure that we get to 100 before, you know, middle of next year on episodes.
So real quick on net neutrality, everyone out there. I saw in the news today, the FCC chairman is upset that his family has been catching a brunt of criticism about his decision making. So he's feeling sad about that. So keep up the good work, everyone, and keep contacting people close to him so they can influence him.
Yes, that's I did not see that news, and that's good to know. So getting more towards the meat of our upcoming interview that we're going to share with you all, and we'll talk a little bit more about in detail after the recording. So there's an interview that I had the chance to do with Ares from Tech Worker Coalition, which started, I think, in California back in, I think, 2015. And it's an interesting really experiment of like tech workers, programmers and engineers trying to do some work in supporting unions and exploring the idea of like what do unions mean, and understanding like the labor impact of like their work, but also what the conditions are in their workplace. It's not necessarily a direct, you know, they're going to start organizing unions, but there's a lot of solidarity work that they're doing that I think is very helpful and educational to a lot of tech workers out there. So I think it's a good discussion, and we will certainly talk about it after we get through it. And so why don't we send you off to that interview now, and we'll come back to you. This is Steven, and I'm joined here with Ares, right? Is that the correct pronunciation?
Sure.
And you're coming from California, Silicon Valley. Why don't you give a little bit of an introduction about yourself and like what has gotten you into what we're going to get to, the Tech Worker Coalition?
Okay. Yeah, so I organize with the Tech Workers Coalition in the Bay Area out of San Francisco. I've been working with them for the past over a year, since the summer of 2016. And yeah, I work in high tech, not as kind of like a programmer, which a lot of the folks in the TWC have that kind of like computer science type of background. I'm a mechanical engineer, but still kind of have come to see myself as, you know, a tech worker, even though I'm not a tech worker in kind of like the colloquial sense that you think of maybe. And yeah, so I work at a company, we build scientific instrumentation. I do R&D type of work. I've been doing that for 5 years, have a background in chemical engineering. But that's kind of like, my second career almost. I was in the construction industry for 3 years before I went back to school. And I think that's kind of a common story for a lot of people that come to work with us. They have kind of other types of life experiences. You know, they didn't just go from high school into a CS program and then into like a cush tech job. Like they maybe worked as like a barista somewhere, or like me, like doing carpentry. And just kind of like the realities of like making a living and like having steady work. Like I went back to school during the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009, mm-hmm. When just kind of like, you know, the realities of the economy kind of set in, and I was like, I had like student loans and all that. I was deep in debt, and just I kind of figured I'd never pay it off, just banging nails. So I went back to school for an engineering degree. And then I kind of landed a job at my current company down in San Francisco. So I went to school and was living in Montana.
Oh wow!
Before I went down there. So anyway, so that's kind of like a long intro and background to my whole scene. But
so yeah. the Tech Worker Coalition started. When did it actually start? What was the start date for it?
I think they started around 2015 at some point, and some of the organizers that are, you know, they're still working with us. I think they wanted to kind of build a connection between like techies, as they're called in San Francisco, and kind of like other activist organizations that had kind of like a oppositional kind of take on techies. Like the techies are seen as kind of like this invading force, even though like the Bay Area is like just historically, you know, been kind of like a tech industry type of area. But you know, this kind of like new wave of techies coming in, you know, everything that comes along with that, like gentrification, rising housing costs, all that. Anyway, so these organizers, they were kind of interested in forming kind of a bridge between these two worlds, and I think the understanding was that movements like social justice movements would be stronger if they had solidarity with this kind of new type of San Franciscan and new type of worker coming in.
Oh, nice. So the what are the kind of, I guess, the short-term goals and then the longer-term goals? Like you said organizers, so like are these people who have had labor experience, or what kind of organized experiences are they coming from, and what are they trying to aspire to?
I think, I mean, we're kind of a rank and file organization, so everybody that we organize, that organizes like as like a TWC, like we don't have members, but as just a TWC person, like they're all working in the tech industry in some capacity. And so we have, you know, we call ourselves a coalition because, you know, we work with labor movements, we work with unions, we work with community organizations, and so that's like the coalition aspect. So but everybody that's kind of organizing like for the for the Tech Workers Coalition is like just a rank and file like tech worker. And so most of us don't have any experience like in kind of like an official labor capacity. Like there's a few people that have background like as organizers in labor, and then like they've moved into like the tech industry, not for any like you know, organizing specific purpose, but just like because of the realities of the economy. And so there's a few people like that, but on the whole, like, no, we don't have labor experience, or most people don't have labor experience coming in.
So in the tech world, like, you said that you do some work with labor unions. Mm-hmm. What kind of work is that? Is that within the workplace, or is it or what does that constitute?
Yeah, that's kind of formed like the solidarity type of aspect of our work. And that's actually how I like came to the Tech Workers Coalition initially, was reading an article about cafeteria workers organizing at Dell down in San Jose. And in the tech industry, most of the service sector workers are like contracted out or subcontracted. So they're employees of a subcontractor that subsequently is hired by the tech company to run their cafeteria or do their janitorial work or do their security work. And so I was reading about these cafeteria workers at Dell who had just won a union, voted to form a union, and then Dell severed their contract with their subcontractor. And so this like technically isn't illegal because they're not, like, the cafeteria workers aren't the employees of Dell, right? And, you know, I thought that was fucked up. And so I reached out to Unite Here, who was organizing that campaign. And, you know, my thinking was, like, if there was Dell engineers and, like, Dell employees on the whole that were showing solidarity, like, whether that's going out on the picket line with them or just, like, wearing buttons around campus, you know, if the management at Dell knew that their employees cared that the cafeteria workers, like, had a fair shake at winning their union, then I don't think they would have been able to just sever the contract like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I reached out to Unite Here, and an organizer there put me in touch with like the kind of like the people that were organizing with the Tech Workers Coalition. So yeah, so that's kind of like how our collaboration with labor unions like is kind of shaped, right? So there's organizing efforts for like this other type of worker in the industry that's usually subcontracted, and a lot of them are in active campaigns for winning a union because of everything that comes along with that, like job security, better benefits, like job dignity, and everything. And so we want to make sure, like, where that's happening, we know engineers and we know employees of the company that are gonna stand up in solidarity, and we want to organize those folks and work with them. So and yeah, so that's, in the past year, we've been involved in a few different campaigns. The cafeteria workers at Facebook just won a union. All of the security officers at the five major contracting companies in Silicon Valley won a union this past year as well. And, you know, we've played like very, very minor roles in that. But I think it's, you know, I think it's been impactful that we can pass out literature to like security officers that a union organizer like couldn't be able to do or couldn't get on campus, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah.
So, so this is interesting because like a lot of tech workers, don't necessarily have union background, don't usually come from union families. So like the experiences are very different. So this may be their first experience of being exposed to a union. I'm kind of curious, and I don't want to generalize too much, but, for the people who are getting actively involved, from the tech side of things, what is their view of the union? Like, how do they see this? Do they see this as mostly, because I've seen this happen with other industries, is that that people kind of look down on unions, like, oh, their job is so bad that they need one.
Yeah.
Like, does that mentality, does that perspective, like, how does that come about? Like, how do people view this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a common kind of perspective among like white collar type of workers, if you want to call them that. But the people that come to like organize in the Tech Workers Coalition, a lot of them, like, especially initially, like, have kind of like a leftist type perspective, and so like they're familiar with like labor history, and like they know that like unions, you know, they're not always like serving like the working class, I would say. You know, like, I think labor history shows that, but I think, you know, they're a powerful force for, you know, like economic justice. And so I think the people that come to organize in the Tech Workers Coalition kind of like know that. So, I mean, I think they took to the idea like pretty quickly. So there's never we're never like convincing like TWC people like that cafeteria workers like should have a union if they want one, you know what I mean?
So does that, is there a challenge though when it comes to the other workers that are not actively involved? Like, does it, like, so people, the other workers in, whether it's your workplace or others or Facebook or whatnot, I'm assuming that you have TWC folks in many different companies. Are there efforts to try to bring about more workers in their workplaces to get involved? And what are the challenges with that, I guess you could say?
I mean, that's, you can read like discussion boards and stuff and see people's comments on unions and you see that kind of anti-union perspective among the people that are commenting. And I think at this point, like you only need like a small group of people to like carry some weight, And so if someone's gonna be like, I'm sure you're familiar with like how you rank your like worker, like your colleagues at a company, like when you're organizing, right? It's like the people that are like pro-union, like gung ho, and then there's like the people that are like, working for the management, like straight up and like actively trying to like compete or combat union organizing. So, I mean, I think we're not like super interested in like pursuing those types of like fives or whatever,
To give some context to our listeners who may not be familiar with it, the typical idea is that you have like a number scheme of like a 1 to 5. One is somebody who's definitely in support of the union. Somebody, two is like somebody who's leaning. Three is an undecided. Four is leaning away from the union. Five is completely opposed. There could be a six of like, I'm not even involved. But those are the different measures that I believe you're referring to. And is a common thing when it comes to union organizing is like trying to keep track and mapping out like what the interest is and where the interest is and where your numbers are overall. So I mean that's good, and I mean it's good to hear that these are discussions that are happening within the tech sector that they're being introduced to it, because I think historically at least the attempts to try to unionize in the tech sector, I would say failed, at least in the U.S. context of things. Outside the U.S., it may be a little bit different in certain places. But so I'm wondering if you all are familiar within TWC about the CWA the Washington Tech Union that was at Microsoft, and the IBM Alliance, which is both CWA, I believe.
So like part of the work that we do is like kind of, there's kind of an educational component. And so that's definitely like a big thing that we organize throughout the year is like we call it like a learning club. And so we have different facilitators for different meetings. They kind of pick the topic that they want to read about and have other people read, and then we'll come together and have a discussion. And so so we had a meeting on kind of looking at like historical aspects of like organizing within the tech sector, and we looked at WashTec, we looked at also kind of UE, United Electric organizing efforts in the Bay Area, like in the electronics industry back in like the 80s. And then there's some other efforts like in San Francisco tech companies like around like the early 2000s as well that we were looking into. So so that kind of like historical perspective is like with us when we're organizing, and I think it's really important that you kind of look at what happened in the past and integrate that into your strategy moving forward.
So there are a couple of questions that kind of come up from that. One is the so WashTec and IBM Alliance are examples of what in the US context we call minority unionism, where you're able to form a union. You don't ever technically get a bargaining contract because you never go for a majority or an election, but you are exercising under the National Labor Relations Act, the ability to collectively act. And usually it helps with changing workplace conditions, and confronting workplace conditions. I believe with Microsoft, I think the thing that they were dealing with was that Microsoft is doing an effort to hire H-1B visa folks that were temporary, along full-time workers and showing that we can easily replace you for half the cost. And this was part of, I believe, if I remember correctly, that was part of WashTec's effort to organize where they gained support. But then their efforts now, and they have a website. The last time I had seen it until today, it looked like it was this website from the 90s. Now it looks like it's from the early 2000s. So I guess they're kind of advancing. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem that they're that involved, at least from what my experiences were. I reached out to them a long time ago within this podcast to try to reach out to them, and they just weren't really interested. Yeah. And so IBM Alliance, I've never actually heard that much about them. I know they were upstate New York at one point when IBM had most of its headquarters there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's actually still around anymore.
Yeah, I think they are still around. I know that in the past year so there's this nonprofit called Coworker, coworker.org, and they have a platform for like having like workplace petition mm-hmm. type of things. And so I know some people in Austin, in like the Austin branch of IBM at IBM mm-hmm. were doing some organizing, like utilizing that, like after the elections.
Yeah.
And like their CEO, like getting on like the economic board of like the Trump administration and all that. They were doing like some organizing around that. And so, but that's like, you know, different of course than like these other like efforts to like actually like get a bargaining unit and all that.
Yeah. So I guess from a industry side of things, where are things? I guess where are wages in relation historically, but also currently? Are they on the rise? Are they stagnant like everybody else's wages, mm-hmm. or are they on the decline at this point? Because we hear, like, we see offers that people will get with like Google that they're getting paid $120,000 a year to start. Like mm-hmm. these are people right out of college, which. When I left college, you know, I was happy to get $35,000, but it wasn't even that far ago. That was 2001. So, but I wasn't doing tech work at the time. Mm-hmm. But so, where are the wages? Where are the trends with that? What are the concerns?
You know, I'm not like super knowledgeable about the current like trends of that. I mean, I think. I can tell you that like tech workers feel that they're like adequately compensated and like, and that's like a challenge in terms of like organizing them. You know, they think they have it like really good. And like, I think they buy into the kind of general, kind of like media perspective that like, you know, they should be lucky that they have those jobs, like, which is like, there's definitely a truth to that. But it, you know, I think it masks a lot of like the actual like work grievances that people have, and that also like says nothing about like, I think that perspective is directed at like a certain type of tech worker who's like college educated, like went to a CS program, like white and male, you know, like there's a lot of like inequalities in terms of compensation for like people of color and like women, you know, like we're all familiar with those stories and that's real. So like you might be a woman working at Google and getting paid like three quarters as much as like your male counterpart. And that's like, you know, Google is under investigation now by the Department of Labor for those type of the wage discrepancies, gender-based wage discrepancies. And so I can't really like say what the trends are. I mean, I think there's probably a sense that, you know, it's not always going to be this good, you know. And you can, you know, there's like universities and boot camps and everybody's like pumping out workers. You can like offshore a lot of this work to other countries. And so I think that's like kind of on the horizon for mm-hmm. a lot of folks. But like, I think that makes a strong case for like us organizing now, like because we're in a strong position. Like if mm-hmm. we make demands from our management, like there's a good chance like we'll get to concessions, you know. And so I think that, yeah, it makes our work like very important and timely.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that have been discussed on our own podcast too is I think the term is casualization of the work. So like, what a lot of companies, including Google, seem to be trying to do is trying to introduce new coding languages and programming languages that are easier for people to work with. What I think is missed is that, by making it easier means that you have you have the ability to educate a tremendous amount of people really quickly that can start doing the coding, which then you can start putting downward pressure on the wages. And seeing that, like, that, I think a lot of companies have tried to do this in different ways. I think Sun Microsystems tried to do it with Java. Whether that succeeds or failed based on the Oracle purchase is a whole other question. But Microsoft has, what, C#? And all of them have their own programming languages that they're trying to get out there that are easier for people to do. And I think that what is missed is that the economic impact of what that means.
Yeah.
You have more people waiting at the door, like, I need a job. I need a job. Right. Give me the job.
Yeah, I think there's like a similar perspective on like kind of like government initiatives to like teach kids how to code, you know what I mean? Like educational stuff. It's like to people think that's, you know, directly aimed at like driving down wages, you know, but you can kind of like mask it as like this economic opportunity for people, but by the time they enter the workforce, like maybe being a programmer like isn't going to be the job that it is now, you know. So yeah, it makes organizing, I think, important.
Yeah. What are some of the other challenges that come with like trying to get some of these workers involved, like from a, I guess you could say, I mean, there are a number of different perspectives. I think what we've learned within the community that we've had is that there tends to be a lot of, and I don't want to pick on a personality trait too much, but I feel it's a factor, introverted tendencies of people who don't necessarily, are not always openly discussing things, and it's a bit of more of a challenge for them. Whereas there are people like myself who is exceptionally extroverted and has the exact opposite of not knowing when to shut up. So on that note, what do you find is challenging in amongst that area and others, I guess you could say?
Yeah. Well, I think there's kind of like, there's different types of challenges. Like there's ideological challenges of like that you face like in the worker. Both in like feeling like they don't have legitimate grievances and also like how they identify, right? And I think a challenge like that the Tech Workers Coalition has is that we're still seen as kind of like a programmers type of like organization, or like something for like people that are CS type of people, you know. And like we really like a focus of ours moving forward is to like change like who is considered like a tech worker, you know. Like, so I think people, like, I think if you work in the tech industry, like you're a tech worker and like you should organize with us. Like, I don't think we should just be like craft based, if you want to like think about it like that. So that's a challenge, you know, like reaching out to like people in like the sales department or like the marketing department, being like, you're a tech worker, like you work in the tech industry, you know, and like you probably have like more grievances than maybe like your programming counterpart. And I think you see that kind of in the organizing campaigns at media, like online media companies. Like those are all like, I think they organize with the writers guilds primarily.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, that's just a straight up like craft based organization. Right. And so I don't know what the solidarity like looks like in those companies between the writers who like get paid, you know, like 60 grand or 50 grand or something like that, like living in New York City. And then the programmers that are doing like all the development of the websites and stuff like that, then are probably making like six figures, you know? And so like, even in like within companies, like there's that kind of like tension. And I don't know if there was like solidarity between those types of workers, like during the campaigns, but you know, I hope there would be. So there's kind of like these ideological barriers. There's I think challenges with like management, just like every like labor organizing campaign in history. And there's kind of like challenges in terms of like where people are located. It's like a very atomized industry. I think that's like probably the case in Boston too. But even out there, you know, like you have one worker from a company of like 12 people that's like wants to get involved, you know, but they're like at this tiny company, you know, and like none of their other workers like give a fuck about anything. So that's a challenge, you know, that we need to like work around, and like we want to like bring those people in and like and work with them too. So
yeah, that, I mean, those do seem challenging. I think you kind of go into the other parts of this because there's the startup tendency or startup trends within the tech sector that benefit tremendously from I would say, I mean, I think the tech sector in general benefits tremendously from what is called neoliberal economic policies of like trying to like the market can solve all problems. I think we see that with the Uberification of things, Airbnb of like, oh no, we don't need hotels and things like this that pay taxes. We can do this completely under the radar.
Yeah.
And basically it means that local resources are not being able to be administered to fill a pothole or pay for public schools. And so like, it becomes like, I could see that ideological challenge there. I don't know how to confront that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been something that, we've discussed. It's just like what I think it has led to, because the tech surge, I mean, if we think of like programmers coming into being known, like from the development of the PC. Have you ever seen the TV show *Halt and Catch Fire*?
No.
It's basically about like the 1980s and the bringing about the PCs and the impact it had. But you have much more. I mean, there's a lot more hardware involved, which hardware and software development at the same time. But I think it's like 1980s, which is more or less when neoliberalism was really starting to hit in stride. I mean, that's when Reagan started eliminating higher tax brackets. And what we started seeing is you can look at 1980s music. It's like all about me. Individualism starts growing as a phenomenon that wasn't necessarily there before. But I think that's also something within the tech sector that hasn't left. Like the individualism of this is only about me is so strong.
Mm-hmm.
I've met with people from Google that I get stuck in these loop conversations, and not to use a tech term in that sense, but it's like we get just stuck in this loop about like it's about me, then it's about them, then it's about everybody, and then it's like, well, but it's really about me again. I'm like, how did we just end up right back to where we started?
Yeah.
And I find that like to be a very big challenge in terms of a lot of things. So then given the neoliberal context of things that has led to larger individualism, like where does that fall into the work that you guys are doing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's like an ideology that we like need to combat. And I think it kind of like that trickles down to the workers. But I think under like heavy kind of like propaganda and like heavy kind of like really heavy handed like messaging coming down from like management and like also like in the schools and like the programs where you're like, you know, you're kind of supposed to be thought of as like an entrepreneur and like all this, you could be the next like Zuckerberg type of deal, you know? And I mean, I think that just like benefits like the bosses, like, so to speak, it like benefits like management and benefits like the CEOs, you know, like, and it keeps workers like putting in 80 hours a week or 60 hours a week when they're getting paid for 40 hours a week. You know what I mean? And like that. So there's that kind of culture that we need to combat. And when someone says, when you like ask like a worker, like, you know, why are you putting in this much time? You know, they're like, well, that's just like how it is. Like, that's how the industry is, you know, and they have like some vague idea that it's like their company's going to like go public or get like acquired or whatever, you know, but like in the present, like they're just like being exploited, you know, like that type of like culture just like benefits like the owners of the companies, like benefits like the venture capital firms, you know, like, and they're just like, and I think they're just being like exploited without really thinking about it. And so, yeah, they need to, I think that's like an ideological barrier. And you know, that's kind of like, it's like a cultural thing. And there's a lot of like toxic cultural aspects of like the tech industry. But you know, then that just like this, the kind of like Uberification of like the economy is like really problematic too, you know, and then you have like failing infrastructures, like failing public transportation and like people taking Ubers and like people taking like their, people taking like the Google bus to work, you know what I mean? Like people taking these like chariot things. I don't know if you have those out here, but it's like,
I've seen these,
they're like mini buses, you know, but kind of like on like a ride hailing type of like platform. And so yeah, like it's kind of, I don't know, we're up against a lot. Like I think maybe we started organizing like 20 years too late or something, because without really like, you know, vibrant like democratic processes like in place, like technology is just going to be used to like fuck us over, like fuck like just working people over. So
yeah, I mean, not to give some hope to it, but like if we think back to one of the most successful organizing drives that happened in U.S. history was the auto industry, And what they, what many people don't realize that what the auto industry had done, were the efforts to try to organize it, were a tremendous amount of radicals got employed, and spent 10 years organizing. Mm-hmm. And it was about 10 years before they actually called for those sit down strikes that occurred that we read briefly over in our history books in the US, but were exceptionally monumental because if it weren't for that, we would never have had the National Labor Relations Act. Now, as a student of labor, I have my critiques of the National Labor Relations Act. Sure. I almost feel like if we didn't actually have it, we could have actually had an actual worker revolution, but that's another discussion for another day. But in the end, it was that effort. So like, if it means seating those organizers now and seating those workers into the workplace now, the biggest challenges I think that we run into is the amount of people that will jump from job to job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather interesting because I feel like they're jumping from a falling platform to another falling platform. Like they think they're getting up, but then they're still actually falling because like the wages are eventually going to go down and everything else. But there's a tendency, at least on the younger side of workers, to jump from job to job.
Yeah.
And so I think those are things that become a challenge going forward. But I don't think it's out of the question to figure out whether what is called salting, where you intentionally get hired to eventually form a union, is out of the question. I think that might actually be a viable option that could be setting the stage for down the road.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we kind of have like an IWW perspective on that, which is like you organize the worker, not the workplace, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like for an industry that's like, has kind of like a workforce that can jump around, you know, if they don't like the job, that they can go to the next startup or whatever. Like, I think that perspective is really important, you know? I know people in like really active, like organizers in the TWC that have like changed jobs, like, multiple times, like, mm-hmm. since I've like known them, you know, in the past year, you know what I mean? But they're still like doing the same work, they're still organizing, they're just in a different place, you know. And so I think that's like an important perspective to keep, you know.
Certainly.
So yeah, I mean, I don't think like there's nothing else to do, you know, in terms of like I don't think it's like futile, but like there's challenges, you know, that we need to like be realistic about.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's nothing else to do. Like you just gotta like organize and work, you know, and stay optimistic.
That's true. And that's good. I mean, we can try to get to what are the things that you all need at this point? Like where do you feel that that either are other challenges, but not necessarily challenges in the same context of what we're discussing, but like what resources are needed,
mm-hmm.
and what networks are needed, and what could people who are either aspiring programmers or tech workers do to get involved if they aren't already in the industry? Like, are you working with campuses and college students? Is that something that's on the scope?
Yeah, that's definitely on the scope. I think we want to like challenge like the conventional model of like a lot of like the boot camps and like a lot of like the engineering programs, you know, that's just like feeding like this kind of like neoliberal attitude, indoctrinating like their students, you know. So we have like plans for that. You know, I think we're going to probably be tabling at like a job fair at Stanford soon, and like because Stanford's like a close by, like really powerful CS kind of like institution.
Mm-hmm.
And we know grad students in the department, you know, we work with like people there. We had a protest like out in front of Palantir, which is like just down the street from Stanford last winter, you know, and that like was kind of targeted at like the CS like students,
mm-hmm.
because Palantir has such like a heavy like recruiting process at their campus, you know. And so and I don't know, stuff maybe will happen with like in a similar way at boot camps and places like that. And I think, you know, just like any organization, we need like people that are dedicated and like committed. I think like there's this organization called Tech Solidarity, and the kind of like leader of that movement, I think, has like kind of tends to get down like in what I read of his writings, mm-hmm. on like the tech worker as being like a very complacent type of person that like doesn't give a fuck about anything, is just like really cynical. And that hasn't like been my experience. I mean, I think the people that stick around the Tech Workers Coalition are like really dedicated to the project and like willing to put in like a lot of work into it, you know? And so we need more people like that.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of cool like projects going on, you know, and we're figuring out ways to like, you know, a lot of people come through, you know what I mean? Like there's like 500 people like in our Slack page, but like maybe like 100 of those people have like showed up to like a event in real life, you know what I mean? And so we're kind of working out strategies in terms of like how to like keep those people engaged and like activate them like further, you know? And
so you mentioned Slack, what are the tools that you're utilizing for communication and organizing?
Yeah. So Slack is like, it's kind of, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with that. It's kind of like a
similar things to it, but yeah.
Yeah. It's like a chat room basically, you know, with like different channels and like, you can have like direct messaging with people. And so that's kind of, we do organizing on that. It's like a useful tool. We have like our website, you know, we have like the person that runs our Twitter account is like awesome and throws out like really radical tweets all the time, so that's cool.
You had mentioned the, what we discussed briefly, like the organizing method of like ones through fives. Do you have any platform that you're utilizing when you're bringing people in? Like, I know you say you're not members, but like when you get somebody active involved in TWC, is there, sounds scary to say it because it's Big Brother, but is there a database that's being utilized in some form that keep track of like who's involved?
Not in terms of like how active they are, you know, but we have kind of like a member list so for like, if like a union comes to us with like, hey, do you know anybody at Google, you know, we can like kind of look at this list with like that. A lot of times we'll list like where people work, you know, and we can be like, yeah, there's like these people we can put you in touch with, you know? And so it's like more of a tool for that as opposed to like managing our own like organization.
Yeah.
I think like moving forward, we have some good strategies in terms of like keeping people involved and like on a more broader type of like affinity based like kind of network. And so I think that's going to be really important moving forward.
And the signing agreements that people end up doing when they get a job with the Google and stuff like that, is that also another place that you guys have explored on organizing because of sometimes like the non-disclosure and non-compete clauses?
Yeah.
And the rights to how the code is written, whether who has the right to it. Copyright holder for that matter.
I know that's like, that's been kind of a focus of like some of the work in Boston from what I've seen. I don't think we've been really focused on that. I think issues will come up more like on an individual basis, like, hey, like my manager's telling me I can't talk to the media, or like, hey, there's like this like non like arbitration clause in my like contract, like what does that mean, you know? And so we try to like, we have like resources for people to like access, you know, to like address those questions. And that's like one of our projects for the next year is like having a worker center that can kind of like serve as like a place where people that have these questions can go. And like, we have this like thing called office hours, with people that are knowledgeable about labor laws and like the tech industry. And, that's kind of like a resource, like we want to provide like on a more broader scope to people, you know, because people like don't read their contracts and like there's shit that like shouldn't be in there and stuff people can get you in trouble with, you know, and all that. So
that's good. Like the other question that is kind of the, I mean, I feel like we're very US centric at this point, which is fine, but at the same time, does TWC have aspirations to be more international in the sense of connecting with tech workers in various different countries because of the fact that you can have a lot of remote workers and how they could participate as well? Because we discussed this before the show, but like back in 2007, a number of people may recall the IBM workers in Italy going on strike on Second Life. But like the connections there they seem very alienated between the different labor groups, because if the unions don't exist in the U.S., like it seems like TWC could be this larger umbrella. And so I'm wondering if there are aspirations for that outside of the United States.
I don't know. I mean, I think people like will reach out to us from like England and like Sweden and like other countries. I don't know, like in terms of a practical perspective, like how we can help people abroad, like actually people like in India too, like a lot of like the IT workers have been organizing out there, you know. But like I think we need to be like a stronger organization to like help pull, like, you know, like actually help them, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I think that's like down the road, but yeah, like, of course, I mean, a lot of this work is being sent abroad, you know, and mm-hmm. just like, even if you think about like the supply lines for like some of these companies, you know, like it being really problematic, you know, we want to, I think at some point, like, address that type of thing too, but mm-hmm. it's like out of the scope. We don't have the organizational capacity for that right now.
Yeah. I understand. I mean
the tech sector is like a powerful force, like it's the most powerful force in like the like economy, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So it's like, it's a nexus of importance and like a strategic, you know, spot in the economy. And so
yeah,
it affects everything, you know what I mean?
Well, it seems that my dream of the day that tech workers will tear up the tracks, if you will, might actually not be as far away. I'm not saying it's near, but I always have these envisions back of the railroad strikes that happened in the 1800s when the workers would just rip up the tracks and prevent the trains from going through. Mm-hmm. And I think about like the IT workers and like thinking about, oh my God, how awesome it would be if they just pulled the cables from every single server. Yeah. And like how quickly the economy would just come to a complete halt if that it was done so collectively. And it seems, I mean, they, not to say that TWC can aspire to get there, but it seems that this is something that could potentially lead to that.
Yeah. I mean, somebody like somebody at Twitter just like turned off Donald Trump's like account a few weeks ago.
Last fucking day,
you know what I mean? And that's like, you know, like whatever, like that has a small impact, but you see like that like hints to like the power like tech workers could have. Like if there's a group of like 10 Twitter employees, you know, that are like, now they're protected under labor law if they like do anything like that, and they can like, they could fuck shit up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like, the power is like at our fingertips, you know.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, like, it's often used like against like the working class, you know, mm-hmm. without people like really thinking about it. And like, you saw that the same week when like SFist and like Gothamist was like closed down, like the CEO, like they had like voted to form a union, and the CEO just like killed the company.
Yep.
You know, but there's like the archive of like works of like all the journalists that's like important for them like down the road to get work, you know, mm-hmm. and like somebody just like, they took all that offline, you know what I mean? And like a programmer did that, you know what I mean? And they could have refused if they were organized and like had the like class consciousness, you know, to refuse to do that. And so, yeah, so we need to reach out to these people and organize them and build class consciousness. And yeah.
Cool. Well, that's great. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to sit down with us.
My pleasure.
Hopefully, maybe a year from now, we could actually revisit and see where we are, and just hopefully that we're making some strides and seeing where it's going.
Yeah, thanks, Steven.
All right, wow. Well, that was a really interesting and insightful interview you did, Steven.
Oh, thank you. Aris happened to be visiting the Boston area, so we actually got together to actually put that together. So it was actually nice. It was well-timed. They're originally from this area, as I mentioned, and they've been living in Silicon Valley for a bit. So, there was a lot that I knew ahead of time going into that interview, and there's some stuff I kind of learned, but I'm kind of curious of what your take on the interview was and what your thoughts were.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. You know, I hadn't really heard that there was a whole lot of tech worker organizing going on. So it was really interesting to hear, you know, what their model is, where they're starting out, what they've built over these years. And it sounds like it's not just a local to the Bay Area sort of movement, trying to spring it up around the country, which is exciting for me to hear about. You know, in Chicago, there's a blooming tech industry. Our dear mayor is constantly trying to recruit companies to open up here and trying to turn Chicago, convert it from the meatpacking plants into the tech worker capital of the country. But, you know, there were a couple of moments there that were pretty near and dear to my heart. When Aris talked about solidarity organizing going on with cafeteria workers and some of the big tech companies' campuses and security worker organizing. You know, I have experience working with both Unite Here and the SEIU, which are the two main groups organizing those workers, and was very, very, very remotely aware of those campaigns from folks I know who were working on them. So it was really nice to hear that, you know, the tech workers themselves were saying, hey, we need to show some solidarity with these folks, and are also taking a look and saying, hey, these folks are winning in union, why not us?
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, frankly, it's a breath of fresh air, hearing that sort of response to organizing, instead of, I feel like there's a classic response where you often see people, especially highly skilled workers, say, oh, well, this housekeeper has a pension, they shouldn't have one because I don't. Mm-hmm. And instead, it seems like really building that class consciousness and saying, I'm a worker, and saying, hey, you know, this brother and this sister, they won their pension, let me win mine.
Yeah. And I think, I agree. That's, I mean, I'm glad that it actually became enlightening to you, and from knowing the movements that were afoot there with the Unite Heres and the SEIUs of California. It's kind of cool. I mean, it's interesting that like they actually work in places where there are other unions. That doesn't replicate itself outside of Silicon Valley too much when it comes to the tech sector. Like here in Boston, that doesn't exist. And I don't know about New York, but I'm pretty sure they don't have the same, like, I mean, Silicon Valley is like basically a campus. So it's mm-hmm. like, it's just a very centralized place that you can organize. So I can see why a lot of the cafeteria workers, janitorial workers and cleaning and stuff like that can be easily unionized. It's just a matter of like, also given the exorbitant cost of living, that it's a good target. So it's good to see these efforts being done by the tech workers who do have a financial benefit well above most of those workers, but they also have access to the campus that most of the places that are fighting the unions don't anticipate. So I think that's a pretty cool experience and idea to go forward with.
And, you know, at the end of the day, and hopefully this is the case in most places, they have the relationship with those frontline workers, with the food service workers, with the janitorial staff, with the engineers in the building, with the, you know, security guards. And, you know, just I listen to this interview and I say, oh, I shouldn't take it for granted that, you know, people are going to be building these relationships with each other. And, you know, it'd be nice to see, you know, more of that in downtown Chicago and, you know, across the country.
Yeah, certainly. It'll be interesting how it progresses. I mean, it's a very young movement experience, and I know that they have some workers up in Seattle area that are getting well organized too. And so it's what's interesting, and the challenge at the same time is also the dynamics of what's happening to the industry, because the idea of remote work is really easy to do, and mm-hmm. that could easily alienate the workforce in a way that breaks from a campus. And so it's the anticipations and the powers that these capitalist software companies have is very real. It's just, and the ability to move is very real, because people are like, oh, it's gonna be hard for them to move. Like, no, shutting down an office is pretty easy. Shutting down a factory, that's a lot harder, that takes more time. But we don't have that anymore. Like, you know, back in the 80s, you could still build motherboards here in the country, and now that's not done. So like impacting things like that are very different. It'll be interesting how it goes forward. I know that we're going to try to progress with them, and a couple of months down the road, check in and see where they're at, and hopefully get some updates on that. I think the challenge that I raised to Aris too is what happens on the international spectrum. Mm-hmm. And it's not clear exactly how this tech worker coalition can evolve in that case, because again, you do introduce new labor laws, you introduce tactics that are very different. And sometimes they're more militant in other countries, as we saw with the IBM workers in Italy.
Sure.
I still was amazed when they took over Second Life and tried to protest there. Just 2007 was an interesting year. Wow. That's shit. That's 10 years ago. Fucking hell. what happened to time again?
I think the challenges that you're bringing up there also, I mean, it fits into the same sort of challenge you'll see as we see an increasingly remote workforce, where, you know, organizations are going to have to learn how to organize in different ways, and then the traditional, you know, like door to door, face to face organizing. And I think you're already seeing in a lot of the other sectors of labor, people embracing new tools for relationship building, you know, social media, text messaging, and the like. And, you know, I think, you know, the way people form relationships are evolving, and or maybe devolving, who knows, but organizing is going to have to keep up with that. And, you know, in the same way that we'll have to deal with building those relationships across international lines, we'll see we're building those relationships across, you know, state boundaries as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll, yeah, I think it'll definitely be interesting in how we approach it. I'm still reminded of Cory Doctorow's book For the Win, because I still think it's a relevant read and a perspective on like organizing tech workers in a different form. And I mean, that's definitely the gaming industry, but that's also a place that needs to be organized pretty drastically. So it's interesting. And I'm reminded for some reason while we're talking about this of, I think it was Jack Welch, former CEO of GE, which is unfortunately fucking moving here to Boston, but and not paying their goddamn taxes. But I remember, I believe he made a quote of something along the lines that he dreams for the day of every plant to be on a barge. I kind of like can see that, like, you know, as manufacturing gets more automated, which, you know, eliminates the labor value anyway, so the cost goes down. But the programmers, it wouldn't surprise me if they start just putting it on a barge in some form, or like whether it's remote or whatever, it's just kind of coming to the same fruition of going to wherever the cheapest labor is and winning it. And I think the Tech Worker Coalition does a good job on articulating the impact that is happening, because it, like, as much as people feel wages are up, they're not. Not in the tech sector. No. Not like people actually think they are. They're blown away by how low they actually are in comparison to, or stagnant as they are back in the 80s when, you know, programmers got paid a lot more compared to most workers. So yeah, but bit by bit, well, I think we're going to get there. I know locally we're one of the things that I brought up locally here in Boston was, do you know how much your coworkers are paid? And that whole don't share your wage thing. And it's an interesting thing to confront because it's still very strong. So if you have a wage, you should share it with everybody and anybody you have that you work with, because chances are there's discrepancies. And, you know, when they say that there's a wage gap, well, guess what? If we don't share what our wages are, we have no idea what the gap actually looks like.
Now, interestingly enough, though, since I'm a public employee, my wages and all my coworkers' wages are a matter of open record. So I do know what my coworkers make.
You're in a unique situation. And for the moment, you are able to have a union. Whether that becomes a national right to work because you're a public sector worker is a whole nother scary thing coming forward.
Well, we'll still have the union. Just how strong will it be is the question.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, and that's another topic that we should actually jump onto, because that's going to also happen soon, depending on whatever the Supreme Court makes their decision. And that's going to have a pretty detrimental effect on public sector unions, which, not looking forward to that day. It will wake unions up, but it's a question of whether we're going to be able to recover quick enough, for that matter.
Yes. So. Well, we'll see. There's always... there's the off chance that one of the justices has moved to a reasonable position as well.
Or I thought you were going to go with that one of the conservative justices might by mistake pass away and die, which would be also nice. But you know, unfortunately, they're a lot younger. But you know, you never know what their dietary restrictions are. You know,
We could, yeah, if this kept happening year after year and just keep kicking the case down the road.
Yeah, we'd be better off them doing making no decisions better than decision being made in almost in this case. So, you know, so speaking to the blood vessels inside the Supreme Court justices of the conservative bench, you know, clot away. Do your best.
But I'll certainly I'll keep you abreast of any developments that happen in the public sector as they pop up.
Yeah,
but cool. We're probably not going to see a decision there until January or so.
Yeah, well, let's hope it kicks down a little bit just so we can get to some other backlogs of topics that we need to cover and try to see if we can get bit on a more routine basis with this wonderful show.
Absolutely.
Well, on that note, Matt, why don't we wrap this up and we could schedule maybe off the list when we're going to try to do this again.
Perfect.
And we'll try to bring it back more frequently. We're up to 2 this year, which I think is better than the year before, which I think was 1, but I may be wrong on that. Don't quote me on those stats. But we'll be looking forward to it. I guess the one other thing to briefly announce is we have a Telegram group, which I think we announced before, but we also now have a Matrix group. And we'll put those links in the show notes for people to be able to join their group. They're bridged together, so you join one, you don't need to join the other. And that's basically it. Thank you for listening.